Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back to All of It. Thank you so much for joining us this hour. I'm Allison Stewart. Welcome back to Robert Mapplethorpe, Part 2, a film that takes us through the life of the artist. We get a look at his early days as he lived with Patti Smith and with other artists at the famed Chelsea Hotel. Director Andy Timoner, hi Andy.
Hello.
Who has twice won the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance, unveils a portrait of Mapplethorpe during the height of his craft. The film stars Matt Smith. Hi, Matt.
Hi.
And it will be released theatrically across the country on March 3rd, but in big cities on March 1st. Let's take a listen to a clip.
Photography, it's about light, it's about composition, it's about the personality of the subject. I'm an artist. That would have been a painter, but the camera was invented.
What gives you solace?
Beauty. Knowing that my work will outlive me.
Matt and Andy are in studio. We're going to talk about that accent in a minute.
Oh, well, okay. It's cool.
So Matt's casting in this film has got a great story behind it, and it starts with your kid. Your kid thought he'd be great.
Yeah. He was a massive Doctor Who fan and a massive Matt Smith fan. And I didn't see it, I have to admit, when he first brought it up from the Doctor Who character. But then Matt's representatives called shortly thereafter, like next week or something. It was serendipitous. And I said, sure, I'd love to have lunch with him. And I walked in, and the person that I met in that restaurant reminded me so much of the person I was writing on the page. Mapplethorpe that I was currently constructing was someone who was so mercurial and so had so much gravitas, but a quiet shyness as well. And that's who I met in Matt. And so I asked him to read, which I'm sure he would tell me shove off if I tried today, but this was 5 years ago.
No, that's not true.
Really?
I think all actors.
Oh, perfect.
I think it's good if you read, because then you don't turn up, and it's weird when you don't sometimes.
I would never ask anymore.
Really?
I mean, he blew me away.
But weirdly, can you remember the first one wasn't so good?
I wasn't going to say that, but yes, I actually never saw it. Did you know? My assistant came in. I was editing Brand, about Russell Brand at the time.
And yeah.
I was all hands on the keyboard, and she said, Matt Smith's reading has come in, and I was so excited to see it. I said, is it good? She said, not really. And I was...
It wasn't that
I said,
good.
Then I don't want to see it.
Yeah.
And I said, just ask him if he'll do it again. I don't want to see it. And I never saw it.
Mm, and I didn't.
Now I want to see it, now that we're talking about it.
No, don't. It wasn't very memorable. And then I, you know, did it again and put a bit more effort into it and wore a vest and some beads and stuff like that.
That's so interesting that you knew it wasn't good.
Yeah.
And why?
Sometimes,
how?
Well, because it's like anything. I guess when you've had a good show or a bad show, you go, oh, that was a really good one today. I just knew it was rushed and it wasn't particularly thought out and it wasn't brave enough. And then the second one, I sort of got into it and spent some time on it and committed, and, you know, it was just a bit more immersive. It was better.
It was jaw-dropping. I literally looked at it and was just, oh my gosh. And then the entire producing team was on board, you know, and we didn't have any idea exactly how we were going to get the funding or what, but we just knew we had our star at that moment.
And there's no movie without this, without...
He carries the film. I mean, it's an incredible cast, but Matt's in every scene, and we shot it in 19 days. And so, we had 155 scenes in the original script in the approved screenplay. That's a lot of work in 19 days.
Yeah.
We shot Super 16 millimeter, and we were worried about, you know, not having enough film, and we barely got through half of the film because we had no time. So we just...
But sometimes that's better, because you don't get stuck and you don't get stuck on precious points. You
have
to get stuff down, right?
Yeah, it focuses. I think human beings can achieve a lot when they really, you know, and you can do a lot in a week.
When your feet are to the fire.
Yeah, yeah. And also, you know, part of it, to bring it back to Robert, what's amazing about him is how prolific he was in terms of just making stuff all the time. And it was, you know, it sort of went hand in hand with the spirit of him in a way where let's just get this done.
Yeah, it was something where, you know, I think it also added to our ability to just kind of to improvise, you know. It forced us to improvise. It forced us to change things as we went and to just roll with certain things and to do what, like, gut instinct felt right at the time. And sometimes those that can yield the best work. I feel like you can feel the tension on the screen. And I was just, the thing to realize is we were doing 3 decades, really 4 decades we shot of New York period in those 19 days. And Matt had to play every color of the rainbow. So it was really, a challenge, right? It's probably one of your most challenging parts, I'd imagine.
He's a fascinating creature. And weirdly enough, we just went to the gallery and...
To the Guggenheim.
To the Guggenheim.
We just had the curators on.
Listen, go and see it, New York City.
It's beautiful.
It's amazing. And I'm in the gift shop downstairs and I'm buying some, like, Mapplethorpe stuff. And then I get this tap on my shoulder and it's his brother, Edward.
What?
Randomly, who came to see the gallery and was like, "Hey, man, you played my brother." I'm like, "What the fudge?" His brother was there.
That's so incredible.
It was beautiful. I mean, I hadn't talked to him. I hadn't spoken to him about the film. I hadn't known what he thought of it. And some journalists had asked. And I said, "I don't actually know if he's seen it because I don't think he was around when the Tribeca premiere." Mm. And it was so nice to hear that he really loved it. He thought it was great. And
he
thought Brandon Spinar.
Yeah.
Because there's,
if
for
Brandon
people who
plays
don't...
him, he thought he did a spot on job.
They look quite similar, don't they?
Yeah, that's why.
Random.
Yeah, one of the reasons we cast him.
People who don't understand know that Robert and his brother had a difficult relationship. Robert wasn't particularly generous at times to his brother. So that's interesting that he would feel like the film was good, even though it was really exploring a really difficult thing, which is family that doesn't take care of family.
Yeah, it's quite a hard storyline, that, isn't it? In a way, he was quite difficult, Robert. That's why I kind of like him.
Yeah, we both decided that we would just go for it, and it really would make an unflinching portrait of this man who was all about contrast and black and white and was like that in his character as well. And mm-hmm. So when he was facing his mortality and his brother was going to live on and carry the name, it was just too much for him after all that he had done to break through all these walls and all, you know, and pull everything out, you know, and became this famous photographer. And you weren't famous if he didn't photograph you. And then suddenly he's going to die mm-hmm. and Edward's going to get to carry it on. That was too much for him to bear. Made him change his name.
My guests are director Andy Timoner and Matt Smith. We're talking about the film Mapplethorpe. So, Matt, you dropped a ton of weight for this role.
Yeah, I dropped some.
And you don't have a lot to drop. Let's just put it that way.
Well, you know.
You're just coming off Prince Philip.
Yeah, I was so bit, yeah. And I had to do it quite quickly. That was the only tricky thing. I only had like 6-7 weeks, so it was miserable. It was a miserable few weeks. But, you know, had to be done.
We shot the AIDS portion first, so he was the thinnest. And then we pulled out the Levain Bakery chocolate chip cookies when we needed him to cheer
Man
up.
Man alive, that cookie place is serious. I love that place, honestly.
And then,
like, it was the first time that I'd had, like, I love chocolate. And it was there was a scene on the steps, and it was like the first time that I'd had it. And I was just like, again, give me another cookie. You know, because usually when you have scenes and you're eating, it's actually one of my pet hates. Watch actors in scenes where they eat. And it's very rare that you see actors properly eat, unless you're watching like a Martin Scorsese film where they really eat.
Matt ate the cookie.
Yeah, man, because I want to see people eat on screen, you know, and so many actors are like, "Oh, I'm going to pretend to eat this pea." And they sort of move their food around a lot, like, whatever, none of that.
Yeah,
method, man.
Well,
when it comes to cookies.
Yeah.
And directors ask, "What's it like working with Matt? What, you know, any tips?" I'm like, "Go get Levain Bakery chocolate chip cookies. And just skimp.
Yeah.
Don't skimp."
We don't do them like that in England, man. That's one thing we don't do as well.
What about the accent? Because you really had to nail a Queen's accent. How did you work with a coach?
Yeah,
did you just hang out in Queens for a while?
Yeah. I had a lovely coach, actually, who lives in New York. And just listen to him as much as possible. He has quite a particular phraseology and a particular cadence. And eventually you sort of have to let it go and do it as you do it. But yeah, just listen and repeat, listen and repeat, listen and repeat.
The film also talks a lot about his early life and that he was from a devoutly Catholic family. Matt, how do you think that played into the way you decided to construct this part?
Mm. Well, you know, I think weirdly, with any character, with any person, I know actually, religion, and if you've been to church heavily as a child, it is in you or in some way, shape or form, for better or worse, in your later life. And I think it informed his view of the world so massively. I think it informed his relationship to the devil, which he was really interested in, his relationship to his own sexuality, which so much of that must have been a grapple with his relationship to God and his family's relationship to his sexuality. And I just think it was so significant in all of these things, especially his art.
I don't think we would even know of Robert Mapplethorpe if he hadn't been an altar boy in the Catholic Church, honestly. I think it's absolutely crucial to his character, both what he was fighting against, but also what he worshipped. He loved the iconography, and it informed his work massively. Mm. But I think what he found really sexy, you know, was not necessarily what the Catholic Church would want people to focus on. It wasn't as much deifying as it was the sex of it, how sexy it was, how sexy Jesus. And, you know, and I feel like to some extent he felt like he was making a deal with the devil in his life and his work, with his life choices, because of, you know, how homosexuality was viewed back then.
Yeah, you do get into that struggle, that internal struggle he has initially, because when he brings Patti Smith home, he's like, we have to say we're married. Not just that you're my girlfriend, but we're married.
Mm.
And it was really interesting to think about him sitting in like a queen's house with the straight-laced. You don't think about that when you think about Robert Mapplethorpe. That I thought was really interesting. You decided to spend as much time as you did on his early life. Why did you?
Because I think it's, you know, we just get older, but we're carrying our little child inside us, you know? And I think Robert desperately wanted the love and respect of his father. It was very important to him, and he could never quite get there with it. And I think the part of it was that his, and then of course coming out was something that he knew would sever the relationship in most ways forever. And then, you know, as soon as he discovered the camera, it was like this grabbing onto the tail of a tiger or something, and it led him into these worlds. It was both a bridge, and it also was sort of protection. It mediated his world, so he could go into these clubs and be sort of apart. But at the same time, it was the way he could get in and explore his sexuality. And so I think, you know, his life work and the way that you see the form and the sculptural form that he ends up taking what was at first verite photography, where he would just shoot like seven guys in leather in a bar. He takes them now and he makes them into this, you know, two men, and it's sculptural, and maybe it's a bust, and maybe, you know, he's making Rodin and Michelangelo out of, and he's turning photography into fine art, and he's turning LGBTQ or gay life at that point, mm-hmm. and S&M into collectible, you know, museum worthy work that you cannot deny. That's so that we will love him. That's so that we will, you know, at the end of the day, he just wants to be accepted and loved, and he gains that. He actually does get that by the end of his mm-hmm. life. And I felt like, as a filmmaker, I needed to show the beginning, but I also really needed to show AIDS mm-hmm. and the fact that he gets sick, and so many of his subjects die. You know, at the end of his life, when he has actually accomplished everything that he set out to do, and he knew he would die young. Mm-hmm. He knew that line that he says to Sam Wagstaff in that bed is accurate. I mean, it's a quote from Robert Mapplethorpe.
Oh, that's interesting.
So he knew he had to do it fast. So by 42 years old, he's out.
So Matt, as you're researching playing Robert Mapplethorpe, and you have some experience playing real people. People know you play Prince Philip in The Crown.
Yeah.
What do you look for? What are you looking to read? What are you trying to figure out about someone who's real? This is not a fictional character.
Well, you know, you try and immerse yourself in the context of New York in the late 60s and the 70s, and the flavor and the tone of him, and as much literature as you can find, as much video footage as you can find nowadays. And I think with all of the sort of people that I've played that are real, I don't think it's like, I think some actors can do that thing where they can mimic and imitate them perfectly. And I don't think I can do that. But I think what I'd try and do is sort of capture an essence after you've done all that research, after you've mm-hmm. read all the books and collated all the evidence that you can. to go, what is the essence of this man on some level? And try and then let that choice bleed into all of it, really, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Sure, it made absolute sense. Okay. What was something that you learned about him that kind of blew your mind? You really didn't know about him.
God, so many things, really. I mean, I when I first heard about it, I didn't know about his sort of sexual appetite. I didn't know just how hard he worked as well. And I think on a sort of personal level, what I find really amazing is a bit like amazing movie stars have, where if they talk to you, you're sort of the only person in the universe somehow in a room full of people. And I think Robert could do that in a way. Nah, he could make you feel like if he loved you, if you felt adored. And I think that's, I think those people are, he's beguiling and
he's
brilliant.
Seductive too.
Yeah, and worked really, really, really hard. And it's funny, like if you go and see the gallery in New York City, which I think you should, you realize in today's context, you talk about the kind of LGBT community and stuff like that, like his photos make so much sense now. And now I think he'd be lauded as a really positive artist. But then he was vilified for, taking pictures of himself in makeup or taking explicit photos of gay men or women that are bodybuilders or just, kind of celebrating indifference somehow.
My guests are Matt Smith and Andy Timoner. She is the director of the film Mapplethorpe. He is the star of the film. So you sort of set it out casually. We did this in 19 days. We weren't sure we were going to have fun. You wrote 58 drafts of this script. This wasn't something that just flowed easily. This has been a labor of love and a lot of hard work. At what point did you know, okay, this is actually going to happen?
Like the day before? day.
Really?
The day of.
To be honest,
it almost fell apart the day before.
For real, what happened?
Just one of those things.
But you can tell me.
One of those things. It would be hard. Like, I don't know how long you have. How long do you have in New York City?
Not that long. Yeah.
No, it was, I originally optioned the material in 2006. So it's 12 years of development and being at the altar several times with different financiers, and things fall apart in this business for the most mysterious reasons, really. I mean, you just think you've seen it all and then something else happens. So it is a miracle. It's really a miracle that we have this movie to share with you. Mm. It's beautiful that we do. I mean, we were like I think we had 10 days left before our rights ran out after 10 years with the Mapplethorpe estate.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was the final extension. I love those guys. They really helped me a lot, but they did scream at me the last time, and I was like, are you sure we can't have any more time?
That's so interesting.
Yeah, but a lot of these drafts were for different budget levels as well, and different scenarios. At some points, we were going to shoot it not in New York, which was always a terrible idea, I thought. But ultimately, when things are bigger, like sometimes work is work that's meant to be, I feel like, is bigger than any one of us. And in this case, I felt Robert here with us wanting this film to be made, and his foundation and estate were very, very passionate about us making this and was supportive from the day one of my script and of me. So it finally happened, thank God.
As soon as I saw the photos, I thought, oh my gosh, this has been sanctioned by the foundation. It has to be. You were able to use
they allowed us to reproduce.
That's huge.
The images. It was very important that we had their support, but they did not by any means censor. I mean, as you can tell in the film, there's some really hardcore facts about Robert Mapplethorpe that are in this film. He is a very flawed character in this film, and they do not turn away from that. They did not make me change that in any way. So they've been a pleasure to work with. And Michael Stout was actually at his deathbed. I mean, he was his attorney. So these are people that knew him, that cared for him. So
I'm interested in your work with Andy, because you do a lot of documentary work. What's it like to work with a director who also does documentaries? Is there anything different about the way she works?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen all of Andy's films, and that was one of the reasons that I was excited to be part of it, because I sort of wanted that type of form, I suppose, which is free-flowing and where you're capturing things that you see. The difficulty with this is that you're shooting on film, and film costs money, man. So like with all things and sort of different forms, you have to readjust your approach. And this is this. I mean, this is your first narrative feature, is it? Am I right in thinking that?
It's the first. I always call them scripted, but
scripted,
yeah, first scripted,
not narrative feature, of course. Your first scripted movie. Yeah, and we just kind of dived in and we're like, you know, once more to the breach, dear friends, once more.
Yes, yes. We would have, I mean, I think that we both had authenticity in mind, and that was something that, you know, as a doc filmmaker and especially as an editor of documentaries, like of my documentaries, choosing the authentic take or knowing when it feels real, I feel like there was trust between us because he had seen all my documentaries. And so we would visit in between these very few takes that we had. And sometimes we only had two. Sometimes we even had one.
One, yeah.
And he would have to trust that we had that
you
authentic take.
You got know? It. Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I can see you like reliving the moment.
Yeah.
When you think about you think of this look on your face like,
you
oh,
sure?
Yeah.
Feels brief, yeah. I mean, you know, we do have a choice, so yeah.
I also realized we wouldn't have enough peanut, like we wouldn't have enough time to get everything, to get all the connective tissue. So I went and got a bunch of Super 8 film, and I brought my Super 8 camera,
really,
and I kept it on my
what? Good. That really adds to the film, I think, all that kind of Super
Thank
8
you.
Stuff.
Yeah, well, it kept you busy in between takes, because he would just be like, what is taking so long? And let's go.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, I'd just take it off my chair and shoot. It was like a little bit of peanut butter for the bread. So, and it gave us that, it gave even more, it lent more authenticity to it, you know, because Sandy Daly at the Chelsea Hotel, she was shooting Super 8 anyway, as it was.
Yeah.
You know, that was the medium of the time.
Yeah.
So,
Matt, what did you learn about New York making this movie?
What did I learn about New York? That I love staying at the Barry Hotel. I want to live in the Lower East Side. It gets hot when you're in leather trousers in the summer, let me tell you. My favorite restaurant is Emilio Bellato, which is an Italian place. And I love New York, man. It's a great town. I love it. I love it here. I think everyone should live here once. Baz Luhrmann said that. Live in New York once, but leave before it makes you hard. Mm-hmm. Live in LA once, but leave before it makes you soft. And I think he's right.
I think he's right as
but
well.
But none of them are as good as London. Sorry, New York.
Now I'm wondering about my life choices.
Yeah, I think Paris is going to jump in here and disagree with all of us,
yeah,
perhaps.
Exactly. And Rome. Oh, Rome's good.
We can just keep going.
Yeah.
Prague's pretty, too. What do you want people to know about Robert Mapplethorpe, Matt?
God, that he was uncompromising and, you know, and yeah, that he was uncompromising and brilliant. And, you know, if you don't go and watch the film, go and see his work, because his photos are completely undeniable. And
but please come and watch the film.
But go and watch the movie, because, you know, why not?
Well,
double up.
I mean, I made it because I wanted to bring him alive. I mean, I everybody wondered, are you going to make a documentary about Robert Mapplethorpe? But I don't really tend to make films about people that are dead. I wanted to make it because he's an impossible visionary. I wanted to make an anthem for artists, and he's such, you know, we met the woman who like bought 24 Bond Street, and she called him the Prince of Darkness. He had this incredible energy that Matt brings to the screen. And so it's a beautiful experience to actually be able to see the life, the story behind the photographs, you know, I think, and to see it on film on the big screen is, I think, probably a treat. We knew we had to make it pretty. Nancy Schreiber knocked it out of the park. We knew we had to make it as at least in the realm of his photography.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God for Kodak and their support, you know, and making us shoot it on Super 16.
And he was very pretty himself. He was a lovely looking man.
Beautiful.
Well, you know, that was the one struggle for me, actually. Was,
I had to always tell Matt he looked great.
Thanks, darling. He was, you know, again, it's that beguiling beauty that sort of transcendent in some way like that, and boy did he use it.
Matt looks pretty gorgeous in this film, and I came to recognize that if I stood on his left side and I got his left profile, it was the most similar to Robert Mapplethorpe.
Is that my good side?
It's the most similar to Robert.
Okay, I'll take that.
So
take
con-
that.
Like
any
I,
side
as
that
I recognize
similar,
that we
yeah.
kept putting the camera
yeah
over
put it in
there.
The corner.
Yeah. The film is called Mapplethorpe. It stars Matt Smith. It'll be in theaters on March 5th. Owen and Matt, thanks for coming by.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Coming up later in the show, Ethan Hawke and Paul Dana will be by to talk about their Broadway production of True West. Stay with us.